You are listening to the Life is Not Complicated, You Are Strong Opinions podcast, produced by Charles Andrews, with your host, best-selling author,
identify yourself,
Carlos Wallace.
What's up, good people? I'm back with you on the Life is Not Complicated, Strong Opinion podcast, with one of my favorite millennials, probably the first female president in about 15 years. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Allie. I'm 22 years old. And I'm from down here in Florida. We live in Fort Lauderdale. It's kind of on the outskirts, like Davie, Florida, so around South Florida.
Yeah, man. So you finished school, and now what, you're in master's program, PhD?
Yeah, so I actually just graduated from Penn State. I was there for 4 years for my BA in political science and communications with a minor in women's studies, which is now gender studies. And I was in grad school, but I just recently decided that I'm gonna go to law school. So I dropped my grad school program and I'm studying for the LSAT.
If you get a law degree, the world is in trouble. Listen, I've known this young lady for quite some time, but I didn't really know her until I saw her rip somebody in half on social media. It was a whole debate topic.
My favorite.
And I think you hurt his feelings. Yeah. Pretty bad. And you're pretty passionate about politics.
Yeah, I've been passionate about politics for probably, I want to say since 2012.
Yeah.
So a pretty long time.
So what made you like that passionate and want to be a part of that roller coaster? Because I love it as well. Mm-hmm. And people say I'm crazy, but you know, I've been called worse.
Well, yeah, it's definitely crazy. In 2012, it was actually pretty random how it happened. I had just moved to Georgia, and I went to a public school, and I was extremely intrigued by how everyone there had, like, one mindset, and I was very different from it, and that was when Barack Obama was running, and I told my mom, you need to take me down to downtown Marietta, which is historically extremely African-American, and my mom was like really scared. She was like, are you sure? Like, we're gonna go to a call bank for Barack Obama? And I was like, yeah, we are. And I took my mom, and me and her went, and we sat in a room for about 12 hours and made phone calls for Obama.
Wow.
And we just, that's when it started, and I was just, it was something that I wanted to do, and ever since then, I've been involved in every presidential campaign since.
Right. So the bug, it got you, man.
Yeah.
So you were involved in Hillary's campaign. This, I know that. What exactly did you do for her campaign?
Yeah, I actually worked on Hillary's campaign. So I was still living in Georgia at the time. And when she first started running, I wasn't back in school yet. It was during the summer. So I started working on it during the summer in Georgia. And I was basically just doing grassroots campaigns, knocking on doors, getting millennials out to vote was the main thing because young people don't vote. But then when I went up to school, it turned into a completely different animal. Mm. It was really like hardcore campaigning. It was weekends, nights, mornings of just like talking to people, trying to get them to understand where they were standing in their like political realm, mm-hmm. and trying to get them to understand that not voting was not an option, and then trying to see where they stood from there.
Right. So do you think you changed a lot of millennials as far as their participation, you know, in the voting process?
I don't know. That's a hard question because I feel like this presidential campaign was a lot different than a lot of other campaigns in the sense where people were thinking I want to pick the lesser of the two evils.
Right.
So, and then that was scaring a lot of people as well because they just didn't want to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was really just getting down to like having to talk to individuals one-on-one like we are and understanding what mattered to them and then explaining your candidate's position from there.
You know, that's interesting you said that. I was on Obama's campaign as well,
mm-hmm.
right? As an organizer for the union that I'm a part of, then United Transportation Union, now SMART.
Right.
But so we went around to do town hall meetings as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in Pennsylvania once, in Philly, Upper Darby, mm-hmm. outside of Philadelphia. And it was a town hall meeting. And there was a gentleman there just adamant that he was going to vote for John McCain. And I asked him, I finally said, so, you know, why is it you want to vote for McCain? And Obama doesn't have experience and on and on and on. And I said, well, what exactly do you do? Mm-hmm. And he shared it. He said, well, I'm a coach. I said, well, have you paid the attention to the, each one of them's educational layout and what they plan to do if they win?
Right.
Well, McCain's plan was all educators have to spend at least 6 hours in a classroom. Well, some states, coaches never go in a classroom.
Ever.
And Pennsylvania was one of those states. And he's like, are you serious? I said, you may want to check on that.
Right.
And he said, well, I can't vote for him. So I think people get so caught up in the hype of why other people vote. Mm-hmm. When it starts with you, right?
Oh, 100%.
And you vote for the person that best fit the needs and put the food on the table for your family. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care what church you go to.
Right.
You know, like, what, how are you going to affect my daily life?
Exactly.
And if you win, will my job go to China? Because if it does, I don't want this guy to win. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I don't think people pay enough attention to that.
Well, human nature is inherently selfish. Like, mm-hmm. you want what's going to be best for you.
Right.
And I mean, you can't say politicians aren't the same. They want what's best for them, which is how they're going to serve you. So,
correct.
I mean, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. But I just wish the voters would pay that much attention, because
right.
they don't. And even I hear people, recently I had jury duty, and Harris County is heavily populated black and brown.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to jury duty, and there's 200 of us in a room. Mm-hmm. And from that 200, they pick 20, 25 or so
right.
to get to the 12, right? There was 4 or 6 black people,
mm-hmm.
and about 25 Spanish, and rest Asian or white.
Right.
And I was like, so if we're the heaviest populated, why aren't we the heaviest number here?
Mm-hmm.
So when you break that down, you know, it's chosen from voters and registered voters, so forth and so on, right?
Right.
So we're not registering to vote, or we're not voting, so you're not getting chosen for
right.
jury duty. So, of course, the jury will never look like you.
Oh, never,
so
yeah.
If you're upset, it all starts with voting.
Yeah.
And, you know, recently we had the judge that Manafort, you know, he was sentenced to 4 years,
mm-hmm.
I think. And that judge is appointed.
Right.
Well, he's appointed by who we vote for.
Mm-hmm.
It always goes back to voting.
Always comes out.
And if
it.
I could just get people to understand that and appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what, this is why my vote matters.
Right.
Instead of saying my vote doesn't matter, because it always does.
Yeah, always.
So and what message do we need to get that through to millennials, would you say?
I think it's coming a long way, to be completely honest, where I think now it's a lot easier to be involved in politics. Everyone can have a voice on Twitter, everyone can have a voice on this, which is a good and bad thing.
I was gonna say, is it good or bad?
It's a good and bad thing, but I think it makes people get more involved. So now more people are politically active than ever. And maybe I'm blind to it because I'm in circles where people are politically active. So I don't see the people that aren't. But I think that more and more people are realizing that politics affect their life.
Every day.
They're realizing that this is something that I can't hide from, that I'm
right.
becoming an adult, I'm becoming this, and like I need to start voting. So I think that it's just time, to be completely honest. But I also think that it's young people telling other young people that they need to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's getting that old mindset out of politics,
right.
which regardless of if you agree with her policies or not, I think Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez
yes.
might be one of the best things that's happened, not according to her policies, but according to like the face that she's bringing to politics,
mm-hmm.
that you don't have to be an old white male to participate.
Right.
You don't have to be rich. You don't have to be white. You don't
right.
have to be this. You can literally be whoever you want to be and make it to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's people like that that inspire younger people to start voting.
Well, and also go back to organizing. That's how it starts.
Yeah.
You know, when I see local elections, not just local, but you know, we have the mayoral election in Houston,
mm-hmm.
and there may be 300,000 votes
sad.
Out of 4 million, you know what I mean? And so when you start talking about Congress and Senate votes, sometimes 7,000, 8,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you take a young person that says, look, between me and my friends, we can get 5,000 people
yeah.
out of these, you know,
right.
in my area to vote for me. Well, that's going to make that old white guy say, what?
Mm-hmm.
Now he has to come with a new strategy or he's going to lose.
Right.
And our city attorney now, it's a young girl. She's 27, 28.
Mm-hmm.
She moved to America like 6 years ago. Ed Emmett had been the city attorney for ever, as long
right.
as I've been in Houston. And she beat him.
Yeah.
You know, she organized enough for her friends, and you know, and now she's wearing the hat. And so it's funny you say that, because it's making the old white guy say, look, man, we're outnumbered.
Right.
So if everyone shows up, we're going to lose.
We got to do something different.
We got to come up with ways to block this voting or something.
Yeah, some other way.
But yeah, so at Penn State, like, the first Obama election, I just happened to be at UT mm-hmm. on election day. And the lines were forever long. Mm-hmm. Like, the students were excited about it. How was it at Penn State on election day?
It was up and down, to be completely honest. I remember waking up early that morning, and I was one of the only people at school that had a car. So my job was to go pick up people who physically did not want to walk, were not willing to, or could not if they were elderly and outside of the college town, and bring them to vote. Mm-hmm. And the excitement was there in the morning. And then I remember this like no one's business. It was the happiest day ever. Like, the sun was shining. It was beautiful in Pennsylvania, never happens. It wasn't cold, and it was just such a happy day. And people were going out to vote. But then as the afternoon hit and you could tell that people were getting consumed with their days, 12, 1, 2, there was not a single soul at the polls. And I had to physically walk to my apartment building, and I had to knock on doors and be like, have you voted yet? I got doors slammed in my face. I got people telling me to go screw off. I got everything in the book. And then at like 5 or 6 o'clock, when people realized that, I mean, in my hopeful vision, I hope that they realized that, you know, they could vote for the first woman president. But as the night came to an end and they realized that voting was closing, it went back up, but it was definitely a hill.
So, and Hillary lost. And I know personally you were very devastated.
Yeah.
So do you feel like the loss was unfair? Like, of course, there's a perception that the Russians tampered and other reasons. So how do you feel about that? Like, what do you think should be repaired in the voting process moving forward, if anything?
That's a loaded question. I do think that it was unfair for the main reason that she has more popular votes, and I'm still up in the air with my vision on the Electoral College. I'm still not completely sure how I feel about it. I don't think that the voting happened the way that it should have. I'm not going to say yes or no that the Russians meddled into our elections either way, but I do think that there needs to be like a deep re-looking at our voting system and seeing how we can elect someone who simply did not meet the same level of votes that Hillary did within the people who were voting.
I'm on the fence also with the Electoral College, because I understand fair representation.
Right.
And if we went completely by popular vote, my concern would be Texas, New York, and California would they would determine everybody.
Right, blow it out of the water.
And so that's scary to me because we have 47 other states that just would not matter.
Right.
So that's why I do like the Electoral College. However, it's a system that could be tinkered with, adjusted to meet today's need, but to do away with it, I don't think we should do that.
Yeah, that's why I'm very on the fence about it, because like you said, it would be a scary world if all three of those states could pick our president.
That's right.
But on the other hand, it's hard to think that a lady who won 3 million more votes than he did just simply was told, no, you can't have it.
And I'm a little bit upset with Hillary. There was some campaigning I would have done different. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish she had gone to Michigan more.
Yeah.
Because that's a shoe-in. She should have won Michigan. She definitely should have won Pennsylvania. And we wouldn't even have this conversation.
Right.
You know? So I don't think Trump necessarily ran a great campaign. I just think he had an opponent that took it for granted.
She 100% took it for granted. And looking back on it, you just think, why didn't you campaign harder in the places that you could have?
That really matter. You know, when first campaign with Barack, we had our meeting, our organizers meeting in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things they said was, hey guys, we're not gonna have a lot of bumper stickers. We're not gonna have a lot of yard signs, because Obama knows he will never get the votes out of Texas.
Right.
So he's not spending a ton of money here. And I was upset at first. I was like, man, well, we may win it. You never know. But as I grew in the process and understood, I was like, you know what? That makes sense.
Right.
So, and I think Hillary spent time in places that didn't matter, whereas she could have spent time in places to get you to the 270.
Right.
That's the goal. Let's get to the 270.
Right.
You'll never satisfy the entire nation. No, not any one person, you know.
And I just think it was interesting on both sides because, like you just said, with like, not that Trump had a great campaign policy at all, but I will stand by this forever. I think the one thing that Trump did have is that he brought out a whole lot of anger and a whole lot of people that no one knew was there.
Yep.
And his campaign did exactly that. It stood on everything that it shouldn't have, and it just brought out.
Well, the you know, fear is the, that's the campaign that it's been used so many times, and it's, you know, and it's worked. But I give the credit to Kellyanne Conway. You know, she polished the turd, man. I tell you, like, people hate her, and I'm like, dude, she's amazing. Like, I don't know if I don't know if I hate her or not. I've never met her, but she cleaned him up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? How many campaign heads did he go through? Like four or five? And then she took him on in.
I say the same thing about Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yes.
That woman has
she take darts
hard,
every day.
Hardest job in the world, and she just stands there.
She take darts every day. And, like, that's impressive, man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even though I don't like them, like, their message, their policy.
Right.
Like I said, I can't say if I like them because I never met them personally.
Right.
But, man, that's impressive.
I agree.
Dude. All right, well, with that, I'm going to take a quick break, man. I'm really enjoying this. We don't get to do it enough.
I agree.
All right, we'll be right back with you on the Life's Not Complicated Strong Opinion Podcast. The things students say, like, you know, man, because of this book, I didn't commit suicide. Because of this book, I can now speak in public and come out of my shell. Because of this book, I'm not so worried about what other people say about me, you know, not looking for their validation. That's what touches me.
My favorite chapter was about not letting either your boss, boyfriend, girlfriend, mother, family, anybody get in your way of being successful in whatever it is you want to do.
To purchase Life Is Not Complicated, You Are, or the other 99 times, or to download the audio versions, please visit carloswallace.com.
We'll be right back with you on the Life Is Not Complicated Strong Opinion Podcast with my girl Allie. Man, hey, you got me all excited with this political stuff. So
it's exciting.
Before we get off of that, I want to talk about your internship, which was pretty cool. I saw you in D.C.
Yeah,
walking around looking important.
It was neat. I interned for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She's the congresswoman for down here in Broward County for Florida. And it was probably one of the best experiences I've ever done. I mean, other than answering emails and answering mail, being able to like be there was probably the coolest thing. One of the coolest things was I was there during the James Comey trials.
Oh, wow.
So okay. I literally woke up at 6 a.m. and I like was by, I was to the Capitol by probably 6:30 and I was already number 500 in line. But just standing in line was like eye-opening. It was crazy to see.
Wow, that's quite an experience, man. So how much do you plan to participate in the upcoming elections?
Now
that Hillary's not running.
I'm indifferent. It really depends on who runs for me. I'm not going to jump into a female candidate's campaign just because she's a female. I don't necessarily think that some of the candidates we have right now are strong candidates. I think that everyone's just throwing their hat in because they're like, we have to get rid of Trump.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few candidates I would strongly stand behind between, honestly, right now, Beto O'Rourke and Joe Biden. I would full-heartedly support Joe Biden.
B&B.
But
those are my two, man.
Exactly. It just depends on who runs.
Yeah, I like Beto. He's seemed to be transparent.
Right.
About his transgressions.
Exactly.
And we need that, especially in this age of social media. And we can find out, dude. So just go ahead and tell us.
Exactly.
You know? But I like it. I'm with you. I think the field is pretty crowded, but to be expected.
It's gonna get more crowded too.
And then it'll thin out.
Yeah.
As the money runs out, so will the candidates. Because, you know, when it comes time, the big boys that write the big checks, will know.
Right.
But it's exciting. I think Bernie, he may be running out early.
Bernie, that's an interesting one to talk about. I feel like he's kind of like the one where you're like, okay, when is he going to announce? You know he's announcing this one because he announced last time and the time before. Mm-hmm. He definitely has a base that's going to follow him. The only thing that scares me about Bernie is that, I'm at least at Penn State, the Bernie supporters did not want to be Hillary supporters. Right. And there was like a clear divide between them. So I just hope that, this is obviously saying if he doesn't get to be the nominee, that the supporters don't so harshly draw that line again.
Right. Well, and that starts with leadership.
Yeah.
Bernie, they were polar opposites in the campaigning. Mm-hmm. Like, same ticket. He's really not a Democrat. Like, you know, he's independent, but he chose that ticket. And they were a lot different in their campaign style, their message. So I could see why. I didn't agree with it because, you know, I'm Democrat and I want that to be the favorable outcome. But I could see why it was so divided.
Oh, yeah.
And it just what, but it was almost the same in the Republican Party with Cruz and Trump. You know what I mean?
Right.
But they squeezed it out. Again, but we had higher numbers.
Yeah, and it's so funny you say that because I remember telling like my dad and whoever else that during the campaign, I was like, I wish that Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio would have gotten the ticket because then at least Hillary would have had like a viable competition.
Yes.
And then he actually called me on election night and he was like, I'm not going to rub this in, but what happened to your viable competition?
Right. Well, I tell people, I said, man, think about the debates. How many debate questions did Trump answer?
Zero.
I was like, dude, this dude, they would say, you know, how do you feel, you know, NATO policy? You know, Bill cheated on Hillary. And the next day, all the media would talk about that.
Literally.
No one ever said, you know what? He never answered that question, you know. And I wish the American people would pay more attention to that.
But they don't.
And say, man, look, this guy has no clue.
Right.
But, yeah. So, the hot topic, the wall. Let's talk about the wall.
Oh my God.
And the immigration policy.
I think the wall has become such like something that we can joke about now, which is so sad because it's not like a joking matter, but everyone wants to like make jokes about it and make it seem as if it's a small matter when in actuality it ruins lives and it's just not a policy that we should be taking on. I don't understand why, with everything else happening in the world, Donald Trump wants to declare a national emergency to get a wall built that Mexico was going to pay for.
Right.
Anyways.
Right.
But if you listen, you would know that none of that makes sense.
No. Well, the wall in itself doesn't make sense. I would like to know, would someone of real intelligence please explain to me what we would accomplish with the wall?
Nothing.
And they said, well, we're going to stop drug trafficking. Do you really think people walking across the border with drugs?
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. Like, I, in my former life, I was an engineer for Union Pacific Railroad.
Right.
And when I hired out in 94 is when the NAFTA agreement first came about. And rail traffic was really heavy in Laredo. So all the new guys had to go work there. And it was bananas.
Right.
And all I was thinking is, those trains come across the border. We have no idea what's in them.
At all.
No. And so I can't help but think, do you really think that no drugs are coming in via train?
Right, any other way.
Or trucks, or boats. Like, the guy that's swimming over the river looking for a better life, he's not bringing cocaine.
No.
If he had cocaine, he don't need to come here.
Right.
He has money. So, yeah, it's just, I would like to know what we would accomplish, right?
Right. And the saddest thing about it is that all the wall is now is basically just a tool.
Yeah.
I mean, sad because anything that ever happens with an illegal immigrant is just a vile aid now to say we need a wall.
That's exactly why we need a wall.
And it's just like, okay, listen to your neighbor who has a case of guns and is like, and he's a law-abiding white citizen. What about him?
Yeah, he's no threat.
Yeah, no worries.
You know, another question I would like to ask them, like, a lot of the border is divided by the Rio Grande River.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in those places, where do you put the wall? Which side? So you can put it on the Mexico side because they're going to tell you to go to hell. And to put it on the Texas side, of course, it can't be right up against the riverbank.
Right.
So it'd probably be half a mile from the river. So once they cross the river, they're still in America.
Right. So now what are you going to do?
And if they die without getting over the wall, they're still on American soil.
Right.
I just wonder what NATO or the United Nations will say about that. Mm-hmm. Like, so how do we fix that?
Well, that's the same question where if you ask, if we're going to build the wall, are we going to build it along the entire southern border of the United States? Or, like, is there going to be a stopping point where if someone jumps over the border, they can just walk and then go around the wall? Like, how far long is this wall going to extend? Am I going to be seeing it in Miami? Like,
I really would like to know. I mean, but I want to get into a real discussion about it, not somebody's, man, we need it. Tell me why.
Right.
You know, if you think it'll stop people from coming to America, then you're crazy. Like, they'll just find another way.
Exactly.
They'll just fly to Canada and walk over.
They'll just swim. They'll do whatever they have to do.
Listen, when it comes to self-preservation and, you know, a better life for you and your family, you'll find a way.
And
you know,
that's what kills me, I think, the most is that the people who are saying build the wall are the people that have had an entire life that have been given to them by their parents that they haven't worked for, that their parents have done everything in their power to give their kids a better life.
Right.
But other people, because they weren't born in America and weren't given that pure luck, aren't allowed to do the same thing.
Well, here's my question also. Why are they mad at immigrants that come and work the job, but not mad at the billionaire that gave them the job?
Right. Well, because, you know.
That's a legit question, right?
Oh, 100%. But that's not a question that anyone's ever going to ask.
Oh, okay. Okay. See, this is why I could never run. Like Carlos, look, man, it's just certain things you can't say. People ask me, man, when are you going to run for? I said, dude, I can't.
Just too
big. Because it's, you can't be too honest.
Right.
Because there would be people mad at me on both sides, you know?
You can't make everyone happy.
No. And I would not win.
Right. I'd vote for you.
So, social media, like, you guys are really involved in social media. Like, that's the thing now. How do you feel about that?
I took a step back from social media. So during the election, I was called a little bit of a crazy person because I was always posting. I mean, I had to due to like the job that I had, but I was always posting on social media and I would get into my fair deal of Facebook fights that Liz always supported me in.
Yep. I've watched.
My fair deal of Facebook and Twitter fights. I think it's good and bad. I think that it's awesome that people are able to like voice their opinions, but I also think it's terrible because people are so misinformed and then you send me an article written by the Drudge Report and you want to tell me that that's viable media, but then your president's screaming at me that CNN is fake news.
Yeah, right.
So it's just a constant, for lack of a better term, pissing battle between who can say that they want the better news outlet.
You're right. When Liz and I first started dating, I mean, forever ago, seems like now, I was saying, man, TMZ eventually is going to be the most powerful news source on TV. She's like, are you kidding? That's not even real news. No, you know.
Right.
But now look, you know, I was like, man, like, it's sad today. Well, I don't want to say it's sad, but if TMZ says it, we believe it.
Oh, 100%.
Period. And it kind of turned the corner when Michael Jackson died. They were the first one to say it.
Right.
And CNN was like, no, we're not sure yet. Mm-hmm. On and on and on. And I think TMZ announced it like 1 o'clock and CNN not until like 5 o'clock.
Right.
And so people were like, well, how does TMZ know?
No, before
CNN. And that kind of established them.
Well,
know?
I mean, I'm pretty sure I could be wrong on this. TMZ was the one who broke the Lori Loughlin and college scandal and everything like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just crazy what news stories now or news outlets have.
Right.
And it's also, it's a scary time to be in the news too. I mean, when you think about all of the journalists and it was in Maryland when that guy walked into the the office and just gunned him down. It's a scary time to be in journalism too.
Well, people are too emotional, man. Like with feeling it up close and personal.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even with the border thing, like you have guys, I see a Hispanic, I'm just going to kill him. what?
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
Where did you come from?
Yeah, calm down, brother. And it's just like, I think people get too emotional and invested in it. Mm-hmm. And when at the end of the day, you ask them, like, how does it affect you? Why it doesn't? It just pisses me off.
Right.
It really didn't affect them one bit, you know, but... And I think they just get too wrapped up in it for no reason.
It's entitlement to be pissed about things that don't even affect you.
Exactly. And it's scary, man.
It's a scary world.
Yeah. It, like with Bernie and the socialist movement, how do you feel with just people talking about that? You know, and what I tell people, listen, nothing's free.
Right.
Someone is paying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand people's frustration with the thought of it.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, I hear people say, man, I hate socialists. And I said, but you go to the airport.
Right.
you know, so how does your generation view that or think about that?
I think it's funny, to be honest, because I would love free college, considering you're talking to me, who is paying... probably, I think, like $40,000 in student loans I'm going to be paying for the next 20 years of my life. I mean, it's an awesome concept, but I don't think that it's anything that's obviously going to be, like, viable. I think that we label a lot of things in order to be able to, like, push it off.
Yeah.
And it's actually funny because my boyfriend, if you know anything about... He's very, very Republican, and I'm very, very Democratic. We talk, like, we get into it sometimes, but his way to silence me whenever we, like, get into an argument is he'll be like, oh, you're a communist. And I'm like, I'm not a communist. I just believe that, you know, everyone has a right, but, like, that's fine.
Right.
But it just becomes a tool that we can throw around now, and no one even knows the real definition of it. I guarantee you, if you went out to the
road, I said the same thing.
Ask 10 people what a communist is. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Yeah, okay. Like, it's not viable.
Right. You know, if we could just fix the system we have, you mentioned student loans, if we could just put a cap on them, like, lower the interest rates, brother. Like, you know, $40,000, I got to give you $140,000 back.
Right.
Like, that should be against the law.
Oh, I 100% agree.
If we could just start with things like that, but to think college would be free for everyone, of course, is absurd.
Yeah.
But can we just be fair with the system that we have?
Exactly. That's the only thing that anyone asks. And I think when it came down to it, no one would even be able to explain to you how free college would work.
Exactly.
I don't even think Bernie Sanders himself can explain
that. He has no answer.
Exactly.
Sure.
So it's not viable. But like you said, just fixing what we have.
That's right.
Just fixing that.
And operate it the way it was intended to operate.
Exactly.
Before greed stepped in.
Exactly.
I think it's another place to take a good quick break, and we're going to close out. Got a couple other millennial questions I want to talk about.
Yay.
But yeah, I'll be right back with you on the Life's Not Complicated Strong Opinions podcast.
The other 99 times, count your blessings. Season 2, showing now on NetNY.TV, Theo's by Verizon, Channel 48, Optimum, Channel 30, and Spectrum, Channel 97. Season 1, streaming on Amazon Prime Video.
All right, we're back with you on the Life Is Not Complicated Strong Opinion podcast. That's our last segment, man. So we're gonna dig into some millennial stuff.
My favorite.
So what would you say is the greatest misconception about your generation?
That we're uneducated. I think that it's a different type of education.
Mm-hmm.
We've been living in a very different world. We have very different access to a lot of things that our parents didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that it's a very different experience, and a lot of times, like, older generations don't understand that because it's different from them. I had, like, a high school teacher who said that millennials aren't as bad as, like, everyone thinks they are, because our parents' generation thought that we were horrible,
then
our parents' generation thought that they were horrible, and it's
this
just on
true.
And on.
This is true. I've had this conversation a couple of times. One, comparing Lil Wayne to Prince. And not to say Lil Wayne is on the same level as a Prince.
Right.
But I remember as a kid, my dad thought Prince was a freak. He's like, right. This weird dude. Oh, no, no. And because Prince had an album cover in like 78, 79 with his shirt off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was just, he didn't do that.
That's crazy.
And my dad thought he was just a nut job, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he lived long enough to eventually be called a genius.
Yeah.
So when you talk about a person that's young and they're just spreading their wings, don't judge them yet.
Right.
You know, allow them the time to develop, mm-hmm. you know? And not to say Lil Wayne will be thought of as Prince, but you get what I'm saying. And also, when I hear people talk about computers and, man, that damn computer, they're gonna get in trouble. And oh, no. Well, our grandparents say the same thing about our parents with TV.
Right, and look where we are.
Because they didn't have TV, they had radio, right? And so our parents grew up with TV.
Right.
And then now us. And so their parents are afraid of TV.
Right.
You know, my dad, there were certain things he wouldn't let us watch because he felt like it was bad for you or, you know, and some of it I'm happy for that now.
Right.
But it's the same thing. It's more access. And I tell people this, like growing up in a small town, you get just enough to have just enough, right? So now if you grow up in a city, you have more access.
Right.
So you may have way more than just enough.
Right.
Now, it doesn't matter if you're in a city, small town, if you have a smartphone, you can go halfway around the world in a day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you allowed that permit at like whatever age it is, you have a smartphone.
Right.
So I think parents sometimes rush kids into adulthood too fast.
Yeah.
And not even realize it with the smartphone.
Right.
Because you're allowing the world to have access to your child. Uh-huh. And you're allowing your child to have access to the world.
To the world.
And they're not ready.
Right.
You know, it's a reason you have training wheels on a bicycle until you learn how to balance the bicycle.
Yes, I couldn't agree more.
So, and I think it's that, you know, young people are rushed out too quick.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about this yesterday with students. Life is very simple until you have a choice.
Right.
You know, when you're young and all you have to do is follow instructions, your parents say, hey, do this, do this, do this. Then you get to college now, you have choices.
Yeah, and it's crazy.
Like, man, what do I do?
Right.
You know, the hardest part about college is remaining disciplined enough to go to class.
Right.
Because you have the choice of not going.
And no one's going to force you to go.
So, yeah, it's you know, until you have choices, man, it's really simple.
Yeah.
Man. So what would you say you and your peers have contributed to society?
Oh, Lord.
beer pong champions.
Yeah, exactly. A good time in college. No, I think that we're a new face. And like when I say it like that, I mean, I think that we're passionate about things that people haven't been passionate about before. I mean, I can speak for myself and the friends that I had in college. I was kind of an anomaly in college. While I was like in a sorority and I did the whole college experience on game days, I was also part of the College Democrats, mm-hmm. Planned Parenthood Action Committee, and then It's On Us, mm-hmm. which is the one Joe Biden started about sexual assault. That right. was the most powerful group I was a part of. But I think it's probably amazing the people I met in those groups and how passionate people were about certain things. I don't know if it's because we've been forced to be passionate about it, where we've been put into a position where we can't avoid certain things. We can't avoid student loans because we're being told we have to go to college. So now we're the face of fighting for lower student loans.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm fighting for the fact that I think women should be treated equally, because my entire life I was in debate and everyone always told me that I couldn't debate if I was a girl.
Right.
So just, I don't know if we're fighting for these things because we've been forced to fight for them,
mm-hmm.
or if we're fighting for them because it's just things that we're genuinely passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think that that's what we bring to society, like contributing to it, is passion that hasn't been there before.
I agree with that. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
And you guys will take a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll roll the dice, like, we'll see what happens. Let's
right.
go.
Let's just go with it.
Whereas my generation was more reserved.
Right.
You know, man, I don't know. I can't do it. I'm scared. I'm afraid.
Right.
We'll keep the same job for 10 years, even though we hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And your generation's like, nope, I won't be here Monday.
I can't tell you how many friends I had, and I'm jealous, to be honest, that graduated from college, moved to LA, moved to Singapore, moved to New York, moved to Houston, moved to literally I have a girl who moved to China, and she was just like, I wanted to like take advantage of this part of my life, and I don't care what repercussions I know I'm going to be in debt, so why don't I add more debt onto it, and let me go do what I have to do,
because 3 to 5 years I may be married, 2 kids, that, and I'll never have this opportunity, like I dig it. I guess in a way I was kind of that adventurous, that's why I joined the military, and when I came back, and there was a chance that I may have to move like to Dilley, Texas. That's between San Antonio and Laredo. Mm-hmm. And people are like, man, you gonna move way out there? I said, dude, I lived in Japan for 2 years. Like,
that's not way out there.
You know, so for me, even when I had to go work in Laredo, you know, I was like, oh, well, let's go.
Right.
Because, 18, I was living in a whole different country.
And it's crazy.
You can't just go run to mama, you know? And even the phone call is a little different, like, you know, opposite time zone.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy, but it made me grow up a lot faster than, or I guess kind of what I expected, what I wanted.
Right.
You know? I don't regret one bit of it.
I mean, and that's awesome, like, that you were able to do that, and so many people aren't.
Right. Yeah. And coming from a small town, like, small town people are either A, really afraid to leave the small town, or B, can't wait to leave the small town. There's really no in the middle. It's one or the other. So, and I was the can't wait to leave.
Right. You know?
But I love the place, but I just visit.
Right. And it did well for you though.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. Like it really, that was the training wheels.
Right.
You know, until I was able to balance the bike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, who's your greatest inspiration? And why?
Oh, Lord, okay.
And you can have more than one.
Well, I would definitely have said this for a very long time, and it's going to be so ironic because you were talking about it earlier, but it was definitely, like when I was younger, Hillary Clinton. And it's always been that, which is why I think that, like, I fought so hard in her campaign is because, like, I always looked, and, like, it's the, like, quintessential quote, like, when she said, like, when I'm first lady, like, I don't want to bake cookies and pick out China. Like, I want to have a purpose. Wow. And I was like, that's literally so cool. I was like, no one's ever said that before. But, like, it was definitely her growing up as well. And, like, I'm not just saying this to be cliche because, like, on election night, I was, like, actually so sad because I felt like I knew Hillary as a person.
Right. You met Chelsea, right?
Yeah, I met Chelsea. And I thought that I knew her as a person. And she was just that person that, like, most people didn't even know that they were going to be campaigning for Hillary until they joined her campaign. Like, I knew since I was 6 years old that I wanted her to run.
That's my job.
So, like, that's literally was...
That's my job. Now, Hillary, you run, and I'll fall into place.
No, but she's definitely always been my biggest inspiration. And she's, I mean, I wrote an Instagram thing, like, right after the election, and I was like, just because, like, this happened, like, it doesn't change my opinion of you. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll still, in the future, be my biggest inspiration. Because it's true, like, just because she lost doesn't mean that, like, my opinions change of her. But it's definitely always been Hillary.
So now, when you run, you have to win for her.
Yeah.
It's a different passion.
Right. I'm making her make me the glass ceiling.
Right. So. Different passion, same purpose.
Yeah.
I love it, man. So, one big question, the last one. If you had the opportunity to go back in time to a critical point in our nation's history, what era would you travel to?
Oh, Lord. That's a good one.
And what would you change?
Does it have to be, like, politically?
Whatever you choose.
I definitely would go back. So, I can't remember the name of the movie, which is kind of making me mad. Spotlight. You ever see it?
I did.
I would. That's what I would go back to because I wish that the Catholic Church would have handled things differently.
Mm.
And that's definitely what I would go back to. After I saw that movie, I watched it twice in my communications class. I went into the next period and watched it again because I was like, oh, wow. My God, this is the coolest movie I've ever seen in a good and bad way. But I think that it would have changed a lot of things about religion, but also about politics. And that's why I would go back to that. And I wouldn't want to, like, make anyone relive anything. That's not what I'm saying.
Right,
but
right.
I would definitely go back to when the Catholic Church, like, started to go away from Catholicism, essentially, I guess.
Mm-hmm. You might have to go back before that, but yeah. But yeah, I get your point.
Like, yeah.
Because It's funny you say that. I don't think people realize how much effect that does have on politics.
Right, and they go hand in hand. And if you think about it, and I talked my dad's ear off about this for like 2 months because I was so intrigued by it, but that time period didn't have an effect on just the Catholic Church. It had an effect on journalism, mm-hmm. which I'm passionate about. It had an effect on politics. Mm-hmm. It had an effect on the way that we viewed women, men, children. Like, it had such an impactful impact.
Right.
And half of the country doesn't even know about it. No if clue. You if you were to ask them, like, what happened in Boston?
Well, or the Catholic Church is really powerful. Mm-hmm. They can suppress. Anyway, so.
Yeah.
I like that answer.
Yeah, that's definitely what I would do.
Good answer. Anything you'd like to say before we go?
No, I appreciate you having me on here. It was awesome. I encourage more people to speak out, to, like, get involved in different things.
Good.
Things like this. Be more, that's what I'll leave on. Be more than a Twitter voice. Go actually do
Thank
something.
Thank you. I love it. Well, you keep doing what you're doing, and I'll keep following you, and I'll keep encouraging you.
Thank you.
Call me when you need to, but you're on the right path.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, so we're signing out. It's Carlos Wallace on the Life is Not Complicated Strong Opinions Podcast. See you guys next week.
To join our email list, please visit carloswallace.com.